Welcome now to the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, happy to be with you from our Buck studio with live music provided by violinist Ellen Zhao and her accompanist, Tom Wegley. Ellen is the 2022 winner of the Madison Symphony Orchestra's Final Forte competition, on which occasion she played Lalo Symphonie Espagnole. Welcome to the midday, Ellen.
Hi, Norman. Thank you for having me.
Really looking forward to hearing what you have planned for us, the Sibelius and Bach and Mozart. How many competitions have you been? Now, you're a senior at Middleton High School, so there can't have been hundreds of them.
No, I've only done a few, mostly in the Wisconsin area. But last year, it was just the Final Forte.
How do you approach a competition, or is the answer obvious?
No, I mean, for everyone it's different. I usually just select a piece that I will use for multiple competitions a year, usually a concerto for concerto competitions, and then I'll just start working away, slow practice, listening to the piano part, and then putting it together with Tom, obviously. So lots of rehearsal, individual practice, and then private lessons, and then once I have all the notes, I'll just start thinking about the phrasing and how it fits together with the piano and obviously the orchestra if I get that far.
How long would it take you, say, to prepare that piece that you played for the Final Forte, the Lalo?
I mean, I think it took me a couple weeks to learn the notes, and then it just comes down to really solidifying it. And once I really have it under my fingers, that's when I feel comfortable enough to be able to share it with people. I mean, even playing studio classes after 2 weeks on the piece is pretty nerve-wracking, but I think performing it many times during the learning process is really important when learning a piece.
And you're getting various reactions, critiques along the way?
Yes. When I play a studio class with my violin teacher, we play and we get feedback, and then we wait 2 weeks and we play again and we get feedback. So it's constantly performing and learning.
And when you say you learn a piece and get it in your fingers, that means you're memorizing it?
Yes. I think memorization for me, I try and memorize first, learn all the notes in the piece and the rhythm and figure out the piano part, and then I will start by memory practicing the musicality and bringing out the phrases. So I think memorization is very important early on in the process.
And you think that memorizing just makes it flow better in the long run?
Yes. Yeah, I think, I mean, I used to approach pieces differently. I would like kind of slowly go along and memorize as I learn page by page. But now I've kind of figured out something that works for me, which is just memorizing the piece right when I get it. And then I can start just cracking down on everything else.
And you're memorizing it exclusively from the score, or you're actually hearing recordings? Or
yes, recordings are very important because they tell me like how to play a part. Maybe not specifically, but they give me an idea of what I want to be doing. So I'm not just playing the notes at a static volume or emotion. So I can already kind of bring my ideas out during the memorization process and then solidify those ideas and continue changing them after I memorize the piece.
But if you're listening to a recording of a piece, for example, the Sibelius we'll be hearing shortly, you come to a point where you say, no, that's not me. And you say, that recording doesn't really do it for me. In other words, you're sort of selecting down from recordings as to what would be your sounding board or your point of departure?
Yes. I think the most important part of figuring out what you want in a piece is to look at what the composer wrote himself. And Sibelius was very, very meticulous about the dynamic markings or expressive markings he put in his music, which contrasts to Bach, who had little to no dynamics in his music, or Mozart, who's just set in almost one emotion, and it just varies a little bit. But I think Sibelius wrote to set a scene and tell a story, and he was very specific. So for the Sibelius specifically, I did a lot of looking at the score and looking at each individual marking under each measure, and that really helped me. And then listening to recordings various recordings helps me figure out what other people interpret those markings as, and I can kind of gather like ideas of how I want to bring those out.
What kind of scene do you think Sibelius is painting in the first movement of his violin concerto?
Definitely in the opening, I imagine the piano, who has alternating eighth notes between A and F, as kind of like a rippling, misty, like ocean kind of in Finland, which is where Sibelius was from. And then the violin emerges kind of as a boat out of the mist, and it kind of slowly comes out of the mist and is floating along, and then the story progresses. So it's definitely set in like a mysterious area. Yeah.
That sounds like Sibelius to me.
Yes.
Well, let's hear that opening movement then of the one and only Sibelius Violin Concerto with my guest, live in our Buck studio, Ellen Zhao, violin, with her accompanist Tom Wigley.
Thank you.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
The first movement of Jean Sibelius's Violin Concerto as performed live in our Buck studio by my guest, Ellen Zhao, with accompanist Tom Wegley. There was a lot going on there.
Yes.
And some real stretches, too. I mean, jumping to very high notes and very rapidly and that kind of. Was there anything new when you came to that concerto? You said, boy, I've never tried that before.
I think towards the end, just the series of fingered octaves, which is just octaves are usually 1 and 4, which means you don't have to stretch as much, but now it's 1 and 3 and 2 and 4 on your left hand. So it's a lot of jumping and shifting around with 2 fingers on 2 strings. So it's a lot.
Well, it came off certainly very beautifully.
Thank you.
Did you start playing the violin at 4 or 5 years old, like so many of these young violinists?
Yes, 5 years old.
5 years old. And was that just kind of a given?
I think I started it as just for fun. I never thought that I would stick with it for this long. But, yeah, I think towards middle school I realized that it was something I wanted to keep with me for the rest of my life.
Did you have some favorite pieces that you encountered early on in those first years?
I mean, in the first couple years of my playing, I was just doing Suzuki. I wasn't exposed to a lot of like the big violin rep until much later when I started listening to more classical music and figuring out what I liked. But definitely towards middle school, I started figuring out like exactly what pieces I wanted to play. And at this point, I have a whole list of pieces that I want to learn.
Well, it's good to have a list to look forward to.
Yes.
And what are kind of the challenges that you would look forward to in the next piece that you might learn?
I think musicality is always a thing that I'm working on. I think I have the instincts that are there, but I need to work on really committing to my musical ideas. I think that's a big part of being a musician, is having an idea and sticking with it.
So what would be an example of an idea like that?
I think if you really wanted to bring out a written dynamic in a piece, I think really committing to that and how it fits within the piece and not kind of 90% doing it, but even doing it to like 110%. I guess that's my mentality.
Well, that will probably stand you in good stead. And before we get too much farther into your performing today, where are you going with this then? You're graduating from Middleton High School?
Yes.
Next spring?
Yes. Well, all of this music is for my college auditions, so I'm going to be applying to music conservatories as well as universities.
You have a long list of those then?
Yes.
Yes. Going to inspire you to take that next step, and then not to look too far ahead, but planning to become then a professional violinist or a teacher or some of both, or do you have?
Yeah, probably some of both. I really like working with kids, and I've done a little bit of teaching with my friends and with others, especially at Middleton High School, tutoring kids in the orchestra program. So I think that's something that comes easily to me, is just working with people, and I really like to share what I've learned.
Well, not everybody would have that combination of ability to play and desire and ability to teach. So kudos to you. We'll be hearing more from Ellen Zhao, and we'll get to our quiz question, too, right after this here on WPR. Yesterday's question was very popular, and it went like this. Finland is tops per capita for consuming it, but convenience helps to make Brazilians top in its overall consumption. Of course, it has to be coffee. Brazil being far and away the largest producer of coffee, it would be right at hand for all those Brazilians to quaff it down. And of course, the Finns in those long, dark winter nights, as Sibelius would well know, could use a pick-me-up. That was yesterday's question. Here's today's about places. This fabled London facility has moved around over the years, but its two-part name has always been misleading. What place is that? This fabled London facility has moved around over the years, but its two-part name has always been misleading. Identify that place in the next 27 minutes, and maybe you'll win our prize today. And you can email your answer to us the usual way at midday@wpr.org, or you can call 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Amanda. And as always, we'll see who wins our prize today from among our correct respondents just a couple of minutes before 1 o'clock. Now back to my guest here in the Buck studio, Ellen Zhao, who's a senior at Middleton High School and winner of the 2022 Final Forte competition, during which she performed with the Madison Symphony, the Symphony Espanol of Eduard Lalo. And she has just performed the first movement of the Sibelius Violin Concerto with her accompanist, Tom Wegley. And now we get to solo violin. And you mentioned earlier, Ellen, Johann Sebastian Bach, who gives you virtually no indication of how to play a piece.
Yes. Bach was very, he only included a few dynamic markings, usually just forte and piano, which is loud and soft. And that was honestly just to indicate stylistic direction. So forte would be loud and then soft would be an echo of sorts, which is seen in his E major partita, the prelude. But I will be playing the G minor sonata today, which is, I will be playing the Adagio and Fugue. The Adagio is, I mean, if you follow it, it's just a harmonic progression. That's all it is, just chords. But he writes in between the chords ornamentations with like a rhapsodic feel. And the ornamentations give the player freedom within the harmonic progression to move towards a chord, to stretch a chord, and really just emphasizes the direction that the chords are moving.
Wow. So I would guess that in some cases you'd have a violinist who would be an originalist and say, oh, this is the way Bach would have done it, and they do some research and determine that's the way it was and that's the way I would play it today. But as you say, there's freedom there to interpret.
Yes.
So where do you go with this?
I mean, I prefer Bach played as not too much vibrato, so not too romantically. I'd like to stick with what Bach wanted, but obviously I'm using a modern violin bow, not a Baroque bow, so it wouldn't be the precise Baroque sound that he would have liked. But in the Adagio itself, Bach was very specific with the rhythms of the ornamentations. If you look at his original manuscript, it's just a mess of ink on paper because it's so dark. He's written everything out so clearly, but it's just so compact. It's actually a slower movement, which is interesting, but the ornamentations and the specificity of the rhythm gives you an idea of exactly what he would have wanted. But it also gives you freedom between the chords to do what you wish with speed and phrasing.
Well, all right. Do what you wish with this. This is yes. The Adagio and Fugue from the Bach Solo Violin Sonata in G minor.
Thank you. Thank you.
Adagio and Fugue from the Sonata in G Minor for Solo Violin by Johann Sebastian Bach, played by my guest in our Buck studio today, Ellen Zhao. I'll repeat our 12:30 quiz question, and we'll have more music live right after this here on WPR. And we're back with some tuning there to get us in shape for some Mozart, one of the five Mozart violin concertos. What do you have, Ellen?
I'm playing the Mozart violin concerto number 5. First movement, this is a very lively movement. It starts with the solo violin by itself without the piano. After the piano plays an intro, it's kind of like ascending, very calm, and then it kind of develops into a lively, jaunty tune, and it stays like that for the rest of the movement.
All right, let me fulfill a promise here and build a suspense. As I did mention the quiz question, I'll repeat that quickly. This fabled London facility has moved around over the years, but its two-part name has always been misleading. Identify it in the next 13 minutes, and maybe you'll win our prize today. Email your answer to us at midday@wpr.org. or call 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Amanda. And now, from Ellen Zhao, Mozart.
Thank you.
From Mozart and his fifth violin concerto, a performance featuring Helen Zhao and her accompanist today, Tom Wegley. A great pleasure to have you on the midday.
Thank you so much, Norman.
Look forward to hearing from you again. And now we'll throw it back to our FM studio here at WPR.